Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome to the Football Ramble. Greg Clark resigns, but our boy Gunner is officially back. It's Wednesday, the 11th of November. I'm Jules Breach.
I'm Jim Campbell.
And I'm Andy Rattle.
Yes, hello, Ramblers. We are fully into lockdown 2.0. I'm working from home today. Andy, Jim, I've got you on Zoom so I can see your beautiful little faces. How has the lockdown 2.0 been treating both of you so far, Jim?
Yeah, it's all right. I now live with a dog, so...
Ooh, happy days. Great.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, just hanging out with him, mostly.
It makes it sound like the dog is your flatmate.
He is my flatmate, because he's not my dog.
Right,
He's my flatmate's dog, and he's sort of like... shared between her and someone else. It's a complicated situation, but he's at ours for this part of the lockdown, so
is he doing his share of cooking, cleaning the bathroom and paying the bills?
He's doing his share of eating the cooking But other than that, he's not really pulling his weight. Yeah.
It's a start.
I tell you what, having a dog, to be fair, for this second lockdown, because I didn't have one for the first lockdown. I know we're only, what, a few days into it now, or almost a week. Wait, how long has it been? I've lost count of the days, if I'm being completely honest, but it has been already slightly easier having a dog there for company. What about you, Andy? No dog, but two children to keep occupied in lockdown.
They're at school, though, which is the big difference between lockdown number one. Mm. So I've moved away from being the world's worst German teacher to being the world's, let's say, 437th best podcaster.
The world's foremost Andy Brassel.
Exactly.
Well, look, we're going to make sure that you guys, if you are off work at the moment, or if you're working from home and obviously not really being able to get out and about, that you have as much amazing material to listen to in this lockdown. And there's a brand new episode of Between the Lines out today with Melissa Reddy. This week, she unpacks the prejudiced policing of football fans. It's a really interesting listen. It's all about fans' rights, their reputation, and the history of why they're treated as they are. Laws such as not being able to drink within sight of the pitch were rushed into existence in the 80s and still govern the way fans are managed now. So Melissa finds out why and asks how we can all help to enforce change. Just search Between the Lines with Melissa Reddy in your podcast app. All right, let's get on to the big news story from yesterday. FA chairman, or former FA chairman, Greg Clark resigning. Now, watching this unfold on Sky Sports News throughout the day, it was just like Greg Clark digging himself a bigger and bigger hole the more and more I heard about this. It was it's shocking, really. And just obviously the right thing for him to resign. If you missed this news yesterday, he basically offended everyone, didn't he, boys? I mean, he offended every area in which football is working so hard to be inclusive of. He offended minority ethnic groups. He offended women. He offended the LGBT community. In doing so, he was actually on a call with the government over Zoom to actually talk about Project Big Picture being more substantial than he let on. It eventually went on to them talking about diversity and inclusion, which is where it just all went horribly wrong for him. He referred to BAME footballers as coloured. He also talked about different job roles that people have in the backroom staff and in terms of office as well. And he said, if you go to the IT department at the FA, there's a lot more South Asians than there are Afro-Caribbeans because they have different career interests. Incredible, really. He also described being gay as a life choice. He said that the issue in developing female goalkeepers is that young girls don't like having a football kicked at them. I mean, everything he said was just wrong on so many levels. And after that, he resigned as the FA chairman. Jim, what was your reaction to this?
Well, when you hear it sort of spread out like that, it sounds like he was like somebody screaming at a rally. Do you know what I mean? When you look at all of those different points in isolation, and it's important to remember that actually he was just kind of speaking quite casually in ways that he wasn't really, you know, he didn't consider to be controversial or offensive or insensitive in any way. And that is what's absolutely staggering about this to me. And I saw this, and it was almost, when you look at those, it's like he's lost a bet. Like, it's to see how many people he can upset in one conversation. And it's just unbelievable. And I think the issue is that obviously he should be a lot more aware of the impact of the language that he uses. That goes without saying. And also the opinion, it's particularly, I think the thing that I found particularly galling was when he talks about, if you go to the IT department of the FA, there's a lot more South Asians than there are Afro-Caribbeans. So that perpetuates such a dangerous stereotype that, you know, certain communities are stereotyped in certain ways and pushed into certain careers based on those stereotypes. And he should be so much better at applying critical thinking to why he thinks that sort of thing. It really came across to me that the word diversity to him is a word on a meeting agenda. it's something to be ticked off. It's not something to actually be considered. It's not something to actually put any critical thought behind, because clearly he's trying to understand these things. He must be trying to understand these things in the position he's in. And he's failing so catastrophically that he's had to resign. He's been left with no choice to resign. And you just feel like, are they actually serious about dealing with these issues, or are they just trying to look good?
Yeah, I think the thing that struck me actually is, if we go into the detail of it, there are actually points where you can tell he's been engaging with the issues, isn't there, Jim? Because, you know, he talked about BAME people are not one amorphous blob. Was that the phrase he used?
Something like that. And which is understandable, because a lot of people have issue with the term BAME in itself.
Exactly. And so it's clear that he's been trying to address these issues and been party to some conversations that are the start of something useful. It's just clear also that he's not the person to lead it, because he's clearly been engaging with these issues for a long time. I mean, if we go back to, what, 2017, 2018, he brushed off that idea of there being institutional racism at the FA, and he did like totally brush it off and dismiss it. He didn't attempt to engage with it at all.
Didn't he refer to it as fluff?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
So I think that he's learned so little and how to deal with these issues in, like, what, 2-3 years is absolutely remarkable in one sense. But in the other sense, he's someone who's made so many mistakes. I mean, so many misjudgments, I think, of public mood. You look at Project Big Picture, I think that's clearly part of it. I mean, Jules talked at the top about him being on there to explain that in the first place. He was the guy who tried to sell Wembley and couldn't sell Wembley. I mean, it's just a catalogue of failure. But I think if we move away from Greg Clark actually for a minute, I think that the most concerning thing is this isn't just an isolated case. And that's always the problem, I think, when you get this sort of language used. It's not like it's one person. It's indicative of an attitude, of a culture, of a certain class of football administrator. And if you look in L'Equipe today, for example, there's a big article from the front page about how there's been an institutional sexual harassment at the French FA, allegations of that. Also, you look at the president who's running for re-election at the moment, Noël Le Graët. He is someone who's, I guess, been even more front and centre than Greg Clark, because he's a very media-facing sort of president. And he was the one who, if you go back a month and a half, 2 months, said that, like, racism didn't really exist in football. So this is someone who, again, I think, Jim, when we were talking about it earlier, you're saying a certain type of person who finds it very hard to step out of their own personal experience, which is a dreadful quality for a chairman or a president of any organisation. But what I'm saying is, it's not just down to, it's not just Greg Clark or the FA. We're talking about administrators in football, Europe-wide, worldwide.
Yeah. I mean, it's a certain profile of person that has been in this job because of the kind of historical advantages that effectively old white men have had. And we're seeing a sea change in society, and those people cannot keep up with it. And they're proving it here time and time again. And I don't really have much truck for the idea that you can't teach an old dog new tricks as well, particularly if you're in a position of influence and a position of power like that. Just be better. Just be better. It's what your job is. You've got to lead.
Absolutely. And I think that from what you're saying there as well, boys, like we've all mentioned how important the use of the right language is, particularly when you're in a role so high up. This isn't just any person talking about these issues in football. This is the leader of our national game. And when you put it like that, and he's using the language that he is, it's language like that that gets filtered down through generations, that enforces stereotypes and allows other human beings to form these unfair kind of stereotypes about other ethnic minorities, about women, about whatever it might be, the LGBT community. And language use is so important. So What actually needs to happen now then? Because as you mentioned there, Jim, the last five FA chairmen have all been similar in terms of characteristics as Greg Clark, all white, all male, all over 50 when they took the job. And now we've got the caretaker in charge. It sounds like it's a football manager, but it's the guy that's in charge in the interim whilst the FA appoint a new FA chairman, Peter McCormick, who also fits that same bill of being a male white over the age of 50. So does it need to change? I think Tyrone Mings was actually asked that in the press conference yesterday. Such a shame because he's there to actually talk about the England game that he's about to play in. But yeah, unfortunately, exactly, when something like this happens, he then has to talk about this instead. He was asked whether or not it was about time we saw someone from a black or Asian minority ethnic group be given a role as the FA chairman or be given this leadership role. And actually, I think Tyrone Mings, he always speaks so eloquently on these subjects whenever he's asked about them. And he actually said, you know what, it's not necessarily about it having a black person being the chairman of the FA. It's just about having a person who is educated and equipped enough to be able to lead football in this country, which I think is just exactly the right thing for him to say, isn't it?
Exactly. And that can't be an impossible profile. It can't be impossible to find somebody that has the, you know, has the ability to do that. It almost certainly needs to be somebody younger, I would think that. Mm. Because I think with this sort of position, it must be so tempting to just kind of like enjoy the garlands that come with being in such a powerful position. But you have to actually be constantly reassessing and reappraising what that role entails. It's not the same as having a job where you have a very specific set of tasks that you do every day, is it? It changes constantly. It changes all the time. And actually tackling what the problems that football is facing in this country are, it is one of those. And you look at the situation, I think back to the situation with Ennio Luco and Drew Spence. And Greg Clark was there for that. It's like, Was the take home from that? Whoa, we got away with that one. So have you learned nothing from that?
I worry that it was. I really worry that it was.
Yeah.
And I think the age thing is really important, Jim. I agree, because I think when you look at how rapidly football has changed over the past 30 years, I think you could say that even more so for the last 10 years. You know, in many ways, the way that football runs and the way that it expresses itself to the world is so different just in the last decade.
Yeah,
you've got to wonder, how do guys of a certain age understand that? And the answer is, in a lot of cases, they don't.
Yeah.
And that is a huge problem.
I find it astonishing though, because surely to see how important inclusion is, to see how important, and to see just what a fact of football diversity is, to see what a fact of, you know, of everybody being equal is. Look at any pitch. Look at any football pitch. It's generally so diverse already. And obviously there are communities that are left out of that, and there are issues in this country, particularly with this kind of getting more South Asian people into football. It's a strange situation we find in, where there are so few Asian players. And that's obviously something that they need to tackle. But broadly speaking, the benefits of diversity are there for everyone to see. The game is
absolutely
better for having players from different backgrounds in it.
Yeah, I do think it's a generational thing when it comes to language used as well. And when we were talking about the kind of body language that Greg Clark was using when he was on this Zoom call, is you could obviously see the way he was speaking, and he seemed very sure of the language he was using, and very kind of, as you say, it was quite casual in the way he sort of approached all these subjects. It felt to me like he was just having a conversation like he would with friends about this kind of subject. And that's dangerous, that he felt so comfortable to use the language he did when that language was so wrong, so archaic. And I think you're right. I think that now there needs to be someone younger in that role, someone who understands more the kind of society we're living in now, because things have changed so much over the years. So it will be interesting to see how this one pans out, and I'm sure we'll be talking a bit more about it in the coming days and weeks.
I think it's also worth noting that a lot of people have been talking about his intent and saying that, you know, he didn't necessarily understand the weight of the words he was using, but actually the intentions he had weren't necessarily bad. And I don't think intent matters here, because particularly saying things like that homosexuality is a lifestyle choice, they perpetuate stereotypes that are harmful and actually actively dangerous for people in those communities, because they spread just things that aren't true.
But it reveals the way that he thinks about things as well. I don't think you can say that it's just language, and especially the job he's in. Choosing the right words are paramount. That is absolutely 80% of the job. You can't get away from that. So, you know, to me, it's not that he's resigned. I find it extraordinary that he was allowed to carry on so long in the job after this catalogue of errors, really. And so there needs to be a really thorough process to get to the point where the right person is appointed to succeed him, and more of the right people are appointed around him, because that feels important.
Yeah, I think it's very telling as well that after the disaster that happened in that meeting, he apparently phoned around the board for backing and he got absolutely no support. So I think that says it all, doesn't it, really? Someone who has had a lot of support, though, he's back. Gunnosaurus. He returns.
A positive dinosaur story.
Do you know what? I feel like I think we've given Gunnosaurus more air than some footballers
haven't we?
We have, but he was finally pictured back at the ground yesterday at the Emirates. Yes, Gunnosaurus is back. You'll remember us telling you about the story that he was let go, and then good old Mesut Ozil decided to pay his salary and keep him in a job. So he was allowed back in his job. But of course, with no fans in the stadium, Gunnosaurus hadn't been back at the Emirates yet until yesterday. And the pictures are just lovely. They were all over social media. He looks like a happy little dino, doesn't he?
He does. Although
he does always have the same expression on his face.
So he does look happy, because as you say, that is just his foam face. But the chat I've heard is that he's now going to be played by a number of people. Have they gone, no, Mesut, you can keep your money, even though it's our money, sort of, which not. But like, have they honestly knocked back Ozil's offer to pay for Gunnosaurus? Because that, to me, looks like what's come out from this. If they're rotating the guy in the suit, I don't know if Jerry... Is it Jerry Key? Is that how you pronounce
it? Yeah, Jerry Key.
I don't know
Key,
if he's involved. I hope he's involved.
He is involved.
So he's
going to
be
involved.
One of the rotating cast.
Yeah, so I found this quite... I don't know how I feel about this. I feel a little bit sad. I mean, I'm glad that other people have got a job out of this, but at the same time, this was Jerry's job.
Yeah.
And it was Jerry who the people wanted to save from being made redundant. So like you say, Jim, it's almost like they've gone, do you know what, Mesut? Keep your cash. We'll bring Gunnosaurus back. We'll listen to what the people want. But actually, we'll put you on a roster, a rotating freelance dinosaur roster, with several other people.
Unless they've gone, you know what, Mesut? You've said you pay for Gunnosaurus. That's really good of you. There's six of him now. And they're all on 80 grand a year.
I reckon they've made him get in the suit. I reckon.
Who, Ozil?
Yeah, you're looking at Ozil. Mustafi, Socrates, he's got to be in the mix as well.
You wanted to be involved in match days. Boys, you were kicking off.
Socrates, I think, would be really good at it.
I think he would be. He's a war horse, Socrates. I think I actually like him.
He would be an absolute demon with the t-shirt cannon.
I what footballers do you think would make the best mascots at their clubs?
Immediately I've thought of David Luiz. David Luiz would also be excellent.
Yeah, he's sort of like a mascot on the pitch, though, isn't he?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah.
I think the mistake we can make is thinking that Gunnosaurus has to... Because when I was thinking of Jim being one of the rotating cast...
Yeah, well, I wasn't asked. I'd have said yes.
Yet.
Yeah.
But you think it has to be... And, you know, you sort of wonder about Jim. Is he quite tall enough? But it's not really about height, because the height is from the suit.
From the head,
It's like the person who plays Cyril the Swan at Swansea is presumably not 7 foot tall. It's not a David Prowse, Darth Vader type scenario, is it? Because the suit is not so close fitting.
Yeah. I think with Cyril the Swan, though, is notoriously, like, he's got in some scraps, hasn't he?
He's quite anarchic.
Break your arm, etc.
Swans are evil.
Can you avoid it, though, with the wings? I mean, you know.
Well, I just wonder if they just find the drunkest man in the vicinity and go, you're Cyril today. You've passed the breathalyzer. You've come out on top.
The thing is, though, surely height must have some kind of... You must have to be of a certain height, because can you imagine me getting in the Gunnosaurus suit, 5'2"? My head wouldn't get past the t-shirt line.
No. You'd have to be on little stilts, which would be complicated.
I don't think it would work.
Fraught with danger. Fraught with danger.
Well, it's good to see Gunnosaurus back. And he was doing his thing on social media yesterday. I saw he held up some of the new Gunnosaurus packs that the kids can have. Little pencil case, little backpack. Yeah. They'll be sent out to some young Gunners fans, which I think is quite cute. So, yeah, it is good to see him back, whether it's Jerry or someone else. But, yeah, I think they should have to reveal who it is in the suit each day, because I reckon Jerry would get the biggest applause.
Yeah, I think you're right. Make celebrities of them. They should all live in a big house together and they do some sort of MTV-style reality show of it. Keeping up with Gunnosaurus.
Would people... I think we're getting ahead of ourselves here. People are going to recognise Jerry outside the suit. I mean, really, as far as mascots go, he's a bit like David Axelrod. You're very, very familiar with his work, but you wouldn't recognise him if you bumped into him in a cafe or something. Yeah.
Or Deadmau5.
The Daft Punk of Premier League mascots. Do you reckon he, like, you know when they did the Grammys in LA and that they were boarding at LAX, the two Daft Punk guys, wearing like normal clothes, like jeans and t-shirt, but with the actual helmets on? I just wonder if, like, Jerry on a match day, like, you know, knocks about sort of like Tufnell Park in sort of like, you know, jeans and a t-shirt, or possibly because he's an older gentleman, a blazer and a cravat.
Yeah,
but with the head on.
Just the head. It's quite a terrifying thought, actually, isn't it?
That is scary.
If I ever got to wear the suit, I would wear just the head around the house. And I mean just the head. It would terrify everyone.
I don't know what's more terrifying, just wearing the head or just wearing the body with your head popping out, Jim.
But I don't know if my head would stick out. So maybe because of the way it all lines up, maybe that would be even worse. That big decapitated dinosaur wandering about.
All right, let's take a break. After this, we're going to chat Danny Drinkwater needing a club and a bit more from you guys from your emails.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Wrestle Me is a show where two men watch every WrestleMania from 1 to 37, unpicking the multicoloured threads that tie it all together.
I think it's slightly something to do with the fact that Americans don't really like cell phones, do they? Right. I think they've all got basic ones, basically.
That's a big shout.
It is a big shout, but I mean, there is something funny about it. Like, text messaging never took off in the States.
What? Come on now.
Never been big.
Whether you're a lapsed fan or someone who doesn't give a flying laureate about it, there's something for everyone.
If you can get a crowd to boo you for kicking a fabulous ladder.
Fabulous ladder.
And the crowd are booing.
Yeah. Get off that lovely ladder we've just learned about.
It's a beautiful polysexual ladder.
It's a beautiful homebase shabby chic creation.
If you climb up to it, ecstasy can be found at the top.
Listen via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your pods.
Wrestle Me is a Stakhanov production.
Hi, I'm Jermaine Defoe, and this is the Football Ramble.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble. As always, we love hearing from you guys, and especially now in a lockdown, I know loads of you are going to be getting in touch even more so than usual. So keep all your emails coming in. We love hearing them. show@footballramble.com, or of course, you can tweet us at Football Ramble.
Just email show at footballramble.com right now.
Hello, got an email here from Adam Cousins. Good day, Ramblers. Further to your chat today about sloping pitches and the mention of a Sheffield team, I want to draw your attention to the oldest ground in the world, Hallam FC, a semi-pro team in Sheffield. The pitch at Hallam is notoriously sloped, so much so that you'd probably take being 3-0 down at half-time when kicking uphill. It's also incredibly cold with the wind coming in from the empty side of the ground, backing onto an even less flat cricket pitch. Further, incredibly, in the corridor of the men's toilets was a signed shirt by Maradona, which is odd bearing in mind the lack of memorabilia in the clubhouse and bar. I wonder, that is mad, isn't it? If you've got a signed shirt by Diego Maradona and you put it in the toilet, what does that say about your opinion of him? Maybe that's what it, maybe they're bitter about the hand of God.
I think so. Could I don't reckon it's fake. Real.
Yeah. I wonder what other signed memorabilia is tucked away at other football clubs. I mean, if you've got anything that compares to that, let us know. But a signed Maradona shirt in the toilet when you've got nothing
That's
else
impressive.
anywhere it's going to be hard to top that.
I think I might have mentioned this before, but when I lived in France, Jérémy Mathieu, who's recently retired, former Barcelona and Sporting defender, a French journalist went to visit him on... a programme over there when he was at Valencia, and they were showing, look, here he is living the dream in La Liga, etc. And the reporter goes to him, Jeremy, I understand you have a really incredible selection of match-worn shirts that you have. And he's like, yeah, I suppose. And he's like, well, can we have a look? You expect them to be like sort of going into some sort of billiard room where they're all sort of framed on the walls. He takes him into the utility room, right? And on top of the washing machine is a cardboard box, honestly, full of not even folded shirts that he starts pulling out. And he's like, yeah, I've got Messi here.
No way.
You know, and all these other ones. He starts pulling out Zidane. And, and you're like, this is unreal.
Messi's a funny one. Like, you played with him. Did you ask for his shirt after
game? This was before he went to Barcelona. Right. This was before he went to Barcelona. He was still at Valencia at the time.
Do you know what? I do find it incredible, though, because, like, obviously working in telly and stuff, you get to work with a lot of ex-pros, and you do ask them, like, also, like, what's the best thing that you've ever got after a game from another player, or, like, what'd you do with your medals and stuff? Some of them don't know, like, where they've kept medals. And, like, they just don't... Some of them genuinely are like, oh, yeah, I don't really know where I've put that medal, or I don't... I find that baffling. Like, yeah. I'd have a room in my house with... all of my shirts and everyone that I've collected shirts from at the end of games. 100%.
Jules, I might be misspeaking here, but it seemed like you were about to say shrine to myself and then you changed what you were saying. Thought, right, I'm going to row back from that.
Well, because that's it though, isn't it? It is effectively a little shrine to yourself.
And like,
is everyone kind of comfortable with doing that? I certainly don't have a shrine to myself.
Well, I remember hearing, I can't remember who it was, but one... TV presenter, you know, one of these like kiss and tells in the
tabloids. Was it Alan Partridge by any chance?
Yeah. there was this lady saying she'd been back to his house and he'd made her watch a recorded version of a TV program that he'd been on, like he'd Sky Plus'd it or whatever, and he sat there in front of the telly like mouthing all his lines.
Oh, that's so weird. That is so that is creepy. Mad.
I do have
that is odd.
I have posters from Edinburgh shows and stuff, but I feel that displaying them is a bit weird, so I have them on the inside of cupboards, which I'm now realizing is probably weirder.
That's way weirder.
Cheers. Yeah. That's definitely worse. That is so much worse.
Little secret shrines of the self.
It's like you're,
with my laundry
it's like
basket.
You're hiding them. Like you don't want anyone to see them. Someone
well, I
pops
sort of
around.
Don't. I don't want someone to sort of come into my room and go, oh, so you've got a room full of posters of yourself. That's definitely mad.
That is excellent, Jim. Excellent stuff. But yeah, as the email says, if you know about other clubs' signed memorabilia that's tucked away, let us know. I do think that when you go to some of these non-league football grounds, they always have amazing memorabilia in the clubhouses, don't they? Mm. I remember, I mean, talking of sloping pitches, I've been to the Dripping Pan, Lewis's home ground, so many times. That is as sloped as you can get, isn't it, Andy? I know yeah. you've done a bit of work down there as well.
What
such
a name
an interest-
as well. The Dripping Pan. That's incredible.
Yeah. The Dripping Pan.
Is that because of the slope?
Yeah.
That's so good.
Yeah. So not only is it a sloped pitch, they've also recently, I say recently, it was sort of the last time I went, which was quite a long time ago, maybe sort of 6-7 years ago now. I used to go to Lewis quite a lot when I lived down in Brighton, and they have beach huts as their sort of hospitality rooms.
Nice.
So you can hire a little beach hut to watch the game, which is quite cute. But
I've
every
done a
clubhouse,
ramble meets in one of those.
Yeah. Have you? Oh, did you do your ramble meets in the
Maggie
beach
Murphy.
House?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Love it.
Lewis very is cool. Great. Lewis is a mad place, especially when they have the bonfire night thing, which sadly yeah. we didn't have this year.
We didn't. Thanks for reminding us all that the world has ended, Jim.
All right.
but yeah, you do get loads of weird club memorabilia in all these clubhouses. So if you are a fan of any of these non-league clubs, please write to us and tell us what's in those clubhouses, because we'd love to know.
Yeah, we would. We've got another email here from Sean Galley. It says, long-time listener, first-time caller. Are Leicester City to blame for the crazy world we are living in? Since they have won the title, Trump has been elected as president, coronavirus has completely changed the way we live our lives, and Brexit has been dragging on. Thankfully, things seem to be looking up. Trump's leaving office early next year. A vaccine for coronavirus could be available soon, and hopefully Brexit will be sorted and we'll never hear its name again. But if Leicester go on to win the league again, will this be a bookend to the paranormal dimension we have been living in, and the world will go back to normal? What if more chaos unfolds? Also, as a Spurs fan, if we have another title tilt scuppered by Leicester, I will have confirmation of what I've always expected. We are cursed.
I think, like, I don't know, Spurs winning the Premier
not.
League would round off my own personal nightmare. So that could happen, Sean. I think we all feel like we're living in our own personal nightmares to some degree. Yeah, a lot of people say that when David Bowie died, it upset the fabric of the universe. And obviously Leicester winning the title came after that. So could be. All of this stuff could be the case.
It's quite frightening, isn't it? I don't like the thought of it. But when you put things like that, you think, oh my God, if it happens again, we're going to see another round of craziness yeah. in the next few years. I hope not.
It's a step on from Aaron Ramsey killing dictators, isn't it?
It is, yeah. That was weird. That was really weird. It was the consistency of it, wasn't it? I mean, obviously he wasn't really doing it, but it kept happening. Really bizarre, that.
It did.
Yeah, so anyway.
I wonder if Trump gave Juventus the money to pay him a massive signing on fee just to protect himself.
Because yeah, someone told him that story.
Yeah.
They've gone, this guy kills dictators with goals. Oh, well, get him. Like, no, he's not really doing it. Shut up, get him. All right, fine. But anyway, now the Viagra people have come and made a vaccine. And at this point you go, yeah, fine. Any solution will do.
Lovely stuff. Love your emails, as always, show@footballramble.com. Now, we do need to get back to another slightly serious subject. Sorry to be a bit of a killjoy, but I feel like this is something that is so important to talk about. And unfortunately, I feel like it's something we talk about too often now. Apparently, another 10 EFL clubs are struggling to pay wages this month. That's what parliamentary committee has been told. And the proposed £50 million rescue package from the Premier League, that was rejected by the EFL in October. But as I said, I feel like this is something we constantly talk about. There are so many clubs struggling financially in the EFL. So what's going to happen? Is this just going to be something we continue to talk about until more clubs go out of business, like Macclesfield? Thankfully, we've seen that they've recently been reformed and rescued thanks to Robbie Savage and his team of people behind that. But what is going on here, and what needs to change? Because... Yeah. is this just going to keep happening until more and more clubs just go out of business? It's just a sad time for football fans, isn't it?
It is, Jules. And I'm really surprised that it's kind of taken this long for a story like this to come out, because these clubs have been under the pump for a really long while now, especially some of the smaller ones who can't generate TV money, because we know about the iFollow model and how, well, A, it's not very good experience for people actually buying it, and B, how it's heavily weighted to the bigger clubs with bigger followings, like Sunderland, Portsmouth, etc., etc. I do think there's a couple of issues here. Firstly, I think it's not just the money, it's the way that it's going to be distributed. Because to say that the current situation with clubs being in this sort of trouble is simply a result of what's happened with coronavirus, of course it's not helped. It's been something that's a huge problem. But the reason that clubs have been so vulnerable to this, especially in League One and League Two, is because a lot of them are not brilliantly run and have been living beyond their means for a long time. You can say that about Championship teams as well. And what I think is, it just goes back to the same problem, which is the EFL has not been fit for purpose for a very long time. Now, I've heard chat about there should be an independent football regulator for football in England, and I couldn't agree with that more, because I think the biggest problem when you're the Premier League or anyone else, government, thinking of handing over money to help these clubs, you want to know that it's going to be more than the flimsiest of cheap sticking plasters. You need to know that is actually going to help. And do we trust the clubs to look after themselves with the money? Do we trust the EFL to distribute it effectively? I think these are all reasonable questions. So getting beyond like whether the Premier League are being generous enough, we need to know that the money is actually going to make a difference, that is going to go into some sort of not just emergency, let's cover ourselves for the moment, that there needs to be a rethink. There needs to be a move towards greater sustainability for football clubs at every level of the EFL. And that's something that really needs to be worked upon. I'm not really feeling that leadership from the EFL. I don't know about you guys, but that to me, a change to how the system works. And I realise it's an emergency at the moment, but we're working towards something that's a more sustainable way of running clubs has to be the priority at the moment. Am I missing something?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. It's interesting you use the term sticking plaster there as well, because when you look at this situation, it's interesting that Gillian Knight says that, you know, 50 million rescue package is pitiful. And of course it is, because it's spread across so many clubs. It really, really is. And it's very different financial needs. Absolutely. And it's really not going to help that many of them for that long. But we are talking about 50 million quid. Like, that's not nothing, is it? You know, it's a that in itself is a huge amount of money. So something needs to change for that to not be enough. The system doesn't work, does it? The system absolutely doesn't work. And just I don't know what the solution to that is, but you know, someone needs to come in and take a sort of macro look at that. I think this is where an independent kind of regulator comes in, because the system as it is not working. And obviously it's in kind of circumstances that are very, very difficult to foresee and to plan for. But I just feel like I'm actually surprised that
more clubs haven't actually
gone to the wall already. I thought there would have been clubs that had gone by now. And I think it's inevitable. And I think we might well start seeing it certainly before the end of the season.
Yeah. And I think that the thing is I remember when Project Big Picture was sort of the biggest story a couple of weeks ago and everyone was talking about it. And Jamie Carragher on Sky Sports spoke about, you know, what his thoughts were on it. And I think one of the points that he made is that in football business, every football club will choose to do something that benefits them. Every single football club looks out for themselves first. And then if it benefits others as well, then great. And I think that that's the key thing here with what you've pointed out, is that if there was an independent football regulator that oversaw everything, then that wouldn't be able to happen. It wouldn't be a club choosing to do what's best for it. It would actually be what's best collectively for the football community and not just what benefits a football club here, and then how does that help the ones below them? No, it shouldn't be like that. It should be actually looking out for the football community as a whole, because you don't get players, amazing homegrown English talent in the Premier League, yeah, if you don't have grassroots football and football right from the bottom and filtering all the way through to the Premier League, doing the right thing all the way through.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point, Jules, because when you look at the ending of last season, really, with League One and League Two being brought to a close, I mean, you know, we talk about Premier League clubs and we mainly talk about Premier League clubs being individualistic, but I agree, it's exactly the same thing when you get to League One and League Two. And I know Wimbledon got some stick from Tranmere fans, as did some other clubs, for basically voting to end the season in their own interest. But the fact is, when the EFL flipped it over to the clubs, what was going to happen next was absolutely inevitable. I mean, you can't blame individual clubs for looking after themselves, particularly in this time.
Well, the nature of football is competitive, right?
Yeah.
The clubs are, of course, the clubs are out for themselves. They should be out for themselves. That is the nature of the institutions that they are. But that feeds into this situation where that actually doesn't help in a situation like this. So I think, yeah, that this it has to happen. It has to change.
Yeah. Mm. Let's hope that we see some positive change in that area soon. All right, let's move on and talk about one of the forgotten players in the Premier League, Danny Drinkwater. Ever since winning the title with Leicester, his career unfortunately hasn't really gone in the direction that he probably hoped it would when he joined Chelsea in 2017. He's been battling a few personal issues as well, and he's been quoted as saying that because of that and because of his lack of appearances, it led him to falling out of love with football. So recently he has put together, I love this by the way, a showreel of his best goals and some of his best performances to put it out there to try and get him noticed by a club, because he's not been given a squad number this season. So he is available if a club wants him. Now, Jim, after hearing that you've got posters of yourself inside your wardrobe, I've got a feeling that you are all for putting a showreel out there and getting Danny Drinkwater a club.
Yeah, absolutely right. I think as well, and we've seen this in the past. Michael Owen did a thing like this, didn't he? And Owen Hargreaves as well. And they were both like roundly mocked for it. But actually, it is a completely reasonable thing to be doing, especially in these times, because Danny Drinkwater is a bit of a mystery at the moment, isn't he? And it makes sense to hear that he was having a difficult time and perhaps kind of fell out of love with the game, because there were times during that title winning season for Leicester where we on this podcast were almost demanding that he start for England, because he was so good. And I think people have genuinely forgotten what he's got to offer. Because he's what? He's 30? He's still got, in the position he plays, he's still got years left in the tank. And if he's now, the fact he's doing this at all shows that he's kind of in the right headspace to be going, you know what? I'm Danny Drinkwater. I'm better than making the not having a squad number.
I have to say, Jim, referring to yourself in the third person is not the approach I would take. I'm Danny Drinkwater.
Yeah. If someone else does it while paraphrasing you, it's all right, though, I guess.
Right. Is that right?
I think, I don't know. But I hope it works.
I hope it works.
But the thing is, like, people are inevitably going to take the piss, but I think it's very reasonable. Remember the Michael Owen brochure?
Yeah.
You know, that's something that, and today's society is about promoting yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all about the personal brand.
We see it on Instagram, don't we? Every day, people upload videos of themselves, pictures of themselves. Look at me, back at it. Here we go again. Or look at this goal I scored. Or you know,
it's the same thing, isn't it?
No different, is it?
Every player you've ever seen sign for your club, though, you do rush to YouTube and go, oh my God, this player is
unbelievable.
Just the next Pelé, and then they're just sort of fine. They're the Anne of Cleves footballers.
I know Marcus Gale, Wimbledon legend, was famously sold to Rangers on the back of a highlights video that they watched of him that was not the most recent.
I remember when Jurgen Lacadia signed for Brighton, and I looked up his his goals reel, because I thought, oh my God, we're going to get someone that's going to bang in all the goals. Unbelievable. What's he done? Not a lot.
Scored against us, Jules. Scored against us. Yeah. It's the only
course
thing
he did. Of course he did. Wasn't hard, was it? It really wasn't. Released some music, but, you know...
That's what it was about. I thought you were into Lacardia for his music.
Yeah, it was a little bit. I love when footballers have these little side careers. Actually, Michael Vorm, the former Spurs goalkeeper, just opened a barber's?
He has, and this is a bit of a mystery, isn't it? Because he seemed to just, like, retire really suddenly. Not leave Spurs, retire really suddenly. And it's like he's had the idea in the middle of the night. Oh, I want to open a barber's.
I think it's wise. Like,
that's it.
I think it's wise. You know why? I think he saw lockdown coming and he thought, do you know what? I'm going to open a barber's and I'm going to cash in. Cash in while everyone needs a haircut.
But Jules, you need
drop to... Drop everything. I must drop everything and start a barber's in Utrecht. What is going on there?
You need to be in the squad to get that to work. So.
True.
I mean, footballers do cut each other's hair quite a lot.
Is that right?
Really?
For what it's worth. Yeah.
Wait, give me an example.
Well, I remember when I was at the 2018 World Cup in Russia, and we were staying in the same hotel as the Portugal team when they were playing, I guess it must have been... Iran in Saransk, I think. Anyway, we were walking down the hotel after going out for dinner and we could hear some giggling from one of the rooms. And they were all in there with the clippers cutting each other's hair.
Wow.
So if you wonder if all, like, 75% of footballers' money goes on haircuts because they all look so fresh cut single game now, I think there's a lot of inter-team haircutting goes on.
I love the idea that, like, Victor Lindelof is doing Paul Pogba's hair. And it's not some professional hairdresser, because his hair always looks amazing.
Well, I guess, like, Paul Pogba's hair is always ridiculously made such an issue. But what if it's not his choice? What if Lindelof goes, well, I wonder how I'd look with a blonde stripe, Paul?
Yeah.
I like the idea of David Luiz just coming into the dressing room with some clippers and going, who's next? Absolutely not. Don't come anywhere near me. All right, that's it from us today. Thanks for listening, Ramblers. Andy, you're going to be back tomorrow, busy boy. You're going to be here with Bish and with Kate. For now, though, Andy, say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Jim.
Bye.
That's nice. See you later.
This was a Stakhanov production and part of the Acast Creative Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.